Are you looking to generate more rental income with your investment property? Do you want to run your properties with less hassle so that you have more free time? Well, then you are at the right place. This is the Rental Income Podcast, where we talk to owners of rental properties and give you actionable tips and advice that will help you make more money while dealing with less hassle. And now your host, Dan Lane.
I put together a list of 7 things I wish I knew earlier about renting properties, and you can download your free copy. Just go to my website, freelandlordgift.com. Well, today on the show, we have Skip and Mary Saylor, and they have been owning rental properties for 40 years. They're mainly buy and hold investors. They buy a lot of properties and rent them out. And one thing that I really want to talk to them about today is their eviction rate. They just don't evict a lot of tenants. They do a really good job of picking the right tenants to put in their properties. So I want to ask them about their screening process, have them go step by step through everything that they're doing, and we will put everything on our show notes page. You can get to that at rentalincomepodcast.com/episode7. So let's get right into the interview. So Skip and Mary, why don't you just tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got here?
All right. Skip moved to the Hampton Roads area of Virginia in toward the end of his active duty Navy days. And I moved here to work as a computer programmer at NASA Langley. We met. We were buying our own homes at the time we met. We got married, and we ended up with an extra house. So we decided to live in one and rent out the other one, and that's really how we got started as landlords.
So you never really had any interest in owning rental properties before that. It just kind of naturally happened.
It just happened, yeah. When you got two houses and only need one, what do you do with the other one?
Right, rent it out.
Rent it out, and we decided that renting it out was the thing to do.
Well, that's not exactly true on my side. I served with a fellow while I relieved a fellow on a ship, and he'd moved to Charleston, South Carolina, and retired. We went over to his house, and it was bigger and better and more spacious than Captain's house. And so I got more interested in how he'd accumulated that wealth. And he said, well, I've traveled all over the United States and bought houses all the way along. And what he did, he had a great big house, great big swimming pool, and a 4-car garage. And 8 houses paid for in Charleston, South Carolina. And so I thought, well, hey, that might be something to do. And so when I got here and settled down with Mary, we had the first rental with the house I lived in, a nice little Cape Cod. And I was going to the Med for the last time, Mediterranean cruise, and she became the landlady.
You must have had a really good experience then with that first property.
Actually, we had a terrible experience.
Did you?
Really?
Okay.
The first property was definitely a learning experience. I think we ran into the first people who came along who wanted to live in the house. We had no application process. We had no security deposit. I don't think we had a lease. We just kind of said, oh, you want to live here? You got the first month's rent? Okay, it's yours. And needless to say, that was, as I said, a learning experience. Made lots of mistakes with that house. But we got a lot smarter in a hurry.
So then how did you go from that bad? I mean, because a lot of people having a bad experience like that would say, this just isn't for me. We got to unload this house, get rid of this. What made you guys go the other direction and say, let's buy more properties?
A lot of it had to do with economics. It was a matter of purchasing more real estate and taking the tax advantage of owning real estate, or basically sharing a lot of our income or a lot more of our income with the federal government. and we decided that we would rather keep it, shelter it through, you know, income-producing property rather than just turn our salaries over to the IRS.
Right. Yeah, that really, the tax savings really, really is a pretty awesome thing.
It is. It's good. So a lot of, I think the next property we bought was a duplex, and it was through some burned-out landlords that Skip worked with. They had been in some sort of a partnership, and the partnership that turned sour, and they just wanted to unload this duplex that they had, and it looked like the potential was good for positive cash flow there, and it was convenient where we lived, so we decided to take advantage of that, and having gotten smarter from the mistakes we made with the first rental, you know, the second experience was a lot better, and we just kind of kept at it.
So, and you guys never had a property manager. You always did everything yourself?
Yes.
Did things ever get so crazy that you said, you know, there's too much going on with the family and jobs and just living life that I need a property manager?
That's an easy escape for a lot of new people going into the business. But you don't want to fall into that. You need to know how to rent and manage your own property. Hmm. And that's what we began to learn. And there was a bunch of other problems that we had early on that we learned great lessons. There's people out there that are out there not to pay their rent and take care of your property like you would think they would. Some people are out there to cheat you. They cheat everybody, including themselves, and you just don't expect that at first. What you learn to do is if they tell you they live for Mrs. Jones across town, you go over and see if there's Mrs. Jones and find out how they performed over there, because that's how they're going to perform in your house.
So tell me, what's the process? So, I mean, you're checking with their prior landlord.
Yeah. First of all, they fill in a written application. We charge an application fee. We ask to see a pictured ID. And they have to jump through those three hoops before we will consider them for tenancy. And a lot of people won't do that. So they eliminate themselves from consideration by not being willing to pay the fee or produce an ID or give us the information on the application. Once we have an application, we do a credit check. We look through civil court records to see if the person has been sued by a landlord for not paying rent or damaging property. We verify employment, and we like to verify current and prior landlord references. We've experienced current landlords lie into us to get rid of a bad tenant.
Sure.
We've never had a prior landlord unwilling to be truthful with us, because they have nothing to gain and nothing to lose by, you know, being truthful about their experiences with the tenant. So we do it ourselves, but there are tenant screening services available that can, perform those services for you if you choose to do that.
But so why don't you guys use a service? You just figure is it easier doing it yourself?
I just like to speak firsthand with the references and do the digging. I mean, I've done, you know, sometimes I actually drive to a former landlord's home or something of that nature to really feel like I'm getting the truth.
Let me explain. She said former landlord. Do not call or don't expect the current landlord to give you the true picture. You want to check with those prior evictions to make sure it's the people you're dealing with. It might be another person.
What's a deal killer for a tenant? Like, if they have bad credit, are they automatically disqualified? Or
If we disqualified everyone with bad credit, we would have no tenant. We have written tenant selection criteria, and we show that to potential tenants actually before we take their money, their application fee, because if they're not qualified, then I just assume they drop out of the process rather than me have to find out and disqualify them. But what we're looking for is no unpaid landlords. We want to find no utilities and collections like power and water. I don't really mind if they have an unpaid cell phone bill, but the basic utilities that, every renter needs. And I have no crimes against persons in the last 5 years, no drug offenses in the last 5 years on criminal background check. So so those are the deal breakers, or those are the criteria, whatever you want to say. If they can't get their water turned on because they owe the water company, I can't rent to them. If they owe another landlord, you know, money for rent or damages, then I can't rent to them until they've, you know, settled up with that former landlord.
Right. I guess you figure if they haven't paid the previous landlord, they're probably not going to pay you.
Sooner or later.
Yeah.
But there's other, right. You know, I tell the people if there are other flaws in your credit history, then I can overlook those. But those are what I named you, basically. Utilities, landlords, and the criminal.
So how do you turn down a bad tenant or someone you don't want to take on?
You have to tell them. The Fair Credit Reporting Act actually requires you to tell them that you're turning them down and the reasons. And you can tell them either verbally or you can tell them by letter. But you are supposed to inform them. And the reason for that is that mistakes are made. And if it says on somebody's credit history that they haven't paid their water bill or they owe a landlord, and that's actually on there in error, then that consumer, as it's called in the credit world, potential tenant, they need to know that mistake is on their credit report and go to the credit bureau and get it corrected so that it won't have a negative impact on them, you know, when they go to apply someplace else for housing or anything else they might wish to purchase. So that's why, you know, you're obligated to let them know.
If you don't qualify, you don't deserve to live in any of our places. And one of the things is you need to make 3 times the monthly rent. Otherwise, you're not going to be able to live there successfully unless you get a father or mother that's a grantor to do it for them. And then we don't really look on that as great. If they, you know, say have a child and they're married or they're living together, then really we accept those people too. But if they don't qualify, you don't want to rent to them, you tell them. It's the way it is.
It sounds like you have a great screening process. Have you had anyone get through that they move in and you're like, who are you? You're not the person that I screened.
I can't say that we have never had a bad experience, you know, applying the screening tools that we apply, for example. Just in the last 6 months, I had two women who wanted to be roommates. They worked together in a restaurant, and they wanted to be roommates. And I, you know, applied my tenant selection criteria to them. They both qualified. They moved in. And 2 months later, these two people were fighting like cats and dogs. So, you know, we had to deal with that. But a tenant screening process can only tell you about the past. You know, it can't predict the future. So, you know, these people, it's not a 100% fail-proof process, you know. Just like the stockbrokers say, you know, I can only tell you about how this stock has performed in the past. I can't tell you what it's going to do tomorrow.
Right.
And tenant screening is the same way. You make your best judgment based on what you can find out about the potential tenant's past and hope that they stay on that track. But it's not 100%
yet. Right. So in 40 years, how many evictions have you had to do?
Probably a dozen.
Okay. All right, that's pretty good. I mean, for owning a whole bunch of properties and all that time. That's really good. So you guys are doing something right.
Seldom do we actually get to the eviction stage. I mean, we've had to file unlawful detainers, and we've had to require people to move out. But as far as actually going there with the sheriff and changing the locks on the door or putting people's stuff on the street, I'd say no more than a dozen.
Okay. So do you guys have a niche, or like, what's a perfect property for you guys?
One that's paid for.
You mean to buy a new one?
Yeah. So when you guys are looking for a property, is there a certain niche that you're going after, or if the numbers work on any property, will you consider it?
Yeah, the numbers work. We consider properties. One thing that we like, and since we do manage it ourselves, is we like it to be within a half an hour drive of our home. If it's further than that, it's not a good property for us, because we want to be a hands-on managers.
Okay.
For the most part, you know, three bedrooms is always rentable with more than one bath. If it's a bath and a half or two baths, either one works, but that would be more than one bath would be ideal.
And do you like single families more than townhouses or condos, or you like everything?
We don't like condos.
Okay. Okay.
We don't like to pay the condo fees. They're too much out of our control.
Right.
We don't have any condos. We have townhouses, we have single family, we have duplexes, and the biggest thing we have is the fourplex.
Okay.
Or, you know, one or two bedroom apartments under one roof.
But if it's a good deal and fits our criteria, we're interested.
All right. The next part of the interview is the lightning round. Are you guys ready?
Yeah.
All right.
The Rental Income Podcast Lightning Round. 5 rapid-fire questions and answers in 60 seconds.
Okay, the first question is, give me the name of your favorite real estate book.
Landlording by Lee Robinson.
Okay. All right, the number one fear that I hear from people all the time is that they don't want to own a rental property because they don't want to get a call at 3 a.m. that a toilet is clogged. As a landlord of 40 years, have you ever gotten this call?
No, we've never gotten a call at 3 a.m. about a clogged toilet. We have gotten
40 years. That's awesome. Okay. Number three, if you had a property that was sitting vacant for 6 months and you had a potential renter apply that had horrible credit, spotty work history, and a spotty rental history, would you take a chance on them and rent to them, or would you let the property sit?
Let it sit. Tomorrow, the ideal tenant might come along.
Very good.
If you've had it for 6 months, something's wrong. You might be asking too much for the place, or it's not ready.
Yeah. Yeah. Bad condition, bad price. Yeah. Those are probably the two reasons it's not renting. All right. Number four, if you had to give one piece of advice to a new landlord, what would it be?
You make money on rental property three times: when you buy it, when you rent it, and when you sell it. So you have three opportunities to make money.
When do you lose money, Mary?
You lose money the same three times. Same three opportunities to lose money.
All right. And the fifth and final question, would you rent a property to your best friend?
No. We've actually made the mistake of renting to friends or family in the past, and it is always a mistake.
All right. Well, that wraps it up for today's show. If you want to see the notes for anything we talked about on today's show, you can grab the show notes at rentalincomepodcast.com/episode7. Thanks for tuning in. We'll talk to you next time on the Rental Income Podcast.